This is episode number 415, dated Friday, June 6th, 2025.
You are listening to the In Perspective weekly podcast with Bob Branco and Peter O'Toole.
Hi, everybody, and welcome once again to In Perspective. My name is Bob Branco. Glad to be with everybody today. Before we continue, allow me to thank everybody who makes it possible for In Perspective to be made available to the public. We start out with Raymond Gay, our producer. Thank you very much for producing a quality show. It's very much appreciated what you do. Also, the media sources, thank you for what you do. And also, Jacqueline Sylvia from JS Web Solutions, thank you for archiving our shows on my website. In order for folks to find the shows, all they have to do is go to www.brancoevents.com. Arrow down until you get to In Perspective Podcasts. Click on them, and there will be all, or most anyway, of our archived programs from latest to earliest.
Merci, Jackie.
I would like to welcome a brand new media source who has agreed to air In Perspective, and I want to thank them very much. The gentleman's name is Al Gordon, and he represents an AM an internet radio station out of the Miami, Florida area, WJPR. They are going to start airing In Perspective Mondays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. So let me welcome WJPR to the In Perspective family. And once again, let me thank Al Gordon for coming up with the idea to air us. Thank you, Al. We appreciate it. I also want to say hi to a listener, Deborah Joyce. Thank you very much for your letters that you sent to us. They are very much appreciated as well. I also want to say hi to Trish, our facilitator, and Brad for being our streamer. And because we are being streamed, I would like to give out my email address for those people who are listening live. It is bobbranco93@gmail.com. That's bobbranco93@gmail.com. Support animals and guide dogs are very important to some people who need them. And although I do not own a guide dog or any other support animal, I hear about this issue a lot. I know a lot of blind people who experience issues pertaining to the animals or issues with the animals themselves. So here to talk about that is Bill Kotsiaba. He's familiar to a lot of you. We've had him on In Perspective before. He's a fitness person, and he provides a lot of good information about fitness. But today he wanted to talk about emotional support animals and guide dogs and some of the experiences that he personally has had with those issues. Bill, first of all, let me welcome you back to In Perspective. It's great having you.
Thank you so much, Bob. It's great to be here. I really appreciate it. Not real happy with Peter, though. The weather report he offered just annoyed me.
What did you want him to send that over to you right now?
Oh, I'll put a cashier's check in the mail the second he gets here.
It takes a lot more than that.
It's been in the 90s with a ton of humidity. I'm in South Florida. Right. And, yeah. I've been a guide dog user since 1998, and you know, they're always talking about how things are more accessible and things are improving, and you know, as time goes on, I had a much easier time as a guide dog user, 20 years ago, even up to maybe 10 years ago before this explosion of everybody having their own personal therapy / emotional support animal.
Oh, I hear about this all the time. I've heard reports that people are on airplanes with support pigs, support kangaroos. Now, I'm not trying to be insensitive. If you really need that support animal, and if it's a certified support animal, you have paperwork to back it up, I'm in favor of it. You know, I think it's important for you to have that comfort. But Bill, I think I know where you're going with this discussion, and you hinted it in your bio. A lot of this stuff may not be legit. Am I correct?
Google support dog certification or support dog vest. You will get 15, 20 or more hits, $49.95 and up. You can get the vest. You can get a nice little certificate. Maybe, I don't even know, a little ID card. I personally have a very dear friend, and I've made it very, very clear this is not a subject I want to ever discuss with her, because she and her other half just went online and bought certification that her little chihuahua is her support animal. I got to ask you a question before we go any further, Bob, if I may.
Go ahead.
What do we get pets for? Whether it's a dog, a cat, a fish, a parakeet. What is the purpose of having pets in our lives?
I think one of the simplest answers to that question is they're our friends.
Or maybe a better way of saying it is they're our support.
There you go. They are all. They are all emotional support animals. You come home, you had a crappy day at the office, you pet the dog, or you watch the goldfish swim around in the aquarium, or whatever it is, and it makes you feel better. They're all, every time any of us has had a pet, it was an emotional support animal.
And what prompted you to sort of, you know, you said things have gotten worse over the past 10 years. Talk about how that impacted your life. A little bit.
Okay. Well, let me give you some examples, if I may.
Yeah.
Years ago, I used to travel a lot. I used to attend an event in Vegas every year, and I used to travel a lot in the early 10 to 15 years of the 2000s. Sometimes I'd let the airline know in advance I had a guide dog. Sometimes I would just show up. A couple times I just showed up just to see how they'd respond. Just, you know, just for fun. And the response was never anything but, let's see if we can find a better seat so the baby has a little room to stretch out. I never had issues in airports, on planes. You know, flight attendants would be wanting to know if the dog needs ice or water before they're offering me anything. Now, thanks to all these people with these fake, well, those therapy creatures, I have to file paperwork with the FAA. Because there were untrained animals that maybe were rowdy and noisy and barking, or messed on the plane, or nipped a flight attendant or another passenger. Now you have to file paperwork with the FAA.
I want to get back to what you were telling me a couple of minutes ago about what you get when you Google emotional support animals. You know, in other words, buy your certificate. Who's benefiting from these sales?
Honestly, I don't know. I guess anybody can create it. You know, who is controlling it? One of the flaws, and people will get all kind of nasty with me about saying there are flaws in the ADA, but one of the flaws in the ADA is if I say I'm handicapped and I'm entitled to X, Y, and Z, nobody can question it. And I think that's wrong. I'm going to just go way off on a tangent because I've had instances where I wanted to go to an event, a concert. Oh, all the handicapped seating is sold out. And you go, and there are what appear to be normal, healthy people in the handicapped seats.
Well, there have been times, Bill, when I've gone places and I've had to show my identification card from the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. That's happened to me over the years. In other words, I would have to prove my disability, and that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. I walk around with my white cane, too, and I guess that's proof enough for a lot of people.
Well, I think that really should be that way. Cause I actually, a few years back, I was, let's call me a high partial, and I don't look blind. I make an effort to make eye contact, etc. There were a couple of instances where an usher at an event questioned whether or not we were in the right seats because I didn't look disabled. But no, I have no problem with showing documentation. I have a problem with anyone saying I'm handicapped, I'm entitled to.
I see.
But I don't know. I mean, these are all different sources that you find online. There, I don't know how many there would be, but there are several. You can buy the certification. You can buy the vest and you get, you know, it creates the issue now because I'll give you two restaurant scenarios I had very recently within the last year. Went into Greek restaurant with a couple friends of mine. And the person that seated us asked me, is that a service dog? I said, yeah. Do you have certification? Do you have paperwork? I said, no, I don't carry paperwork. There's no reason to. Well, can you have any proof? I said, well, look at her harness. It says the seeing eye. Look at the tattoo inside her ear. It says the seeing eye. It's like, why are you bothering me? And I had another instance where the hostess said, do you have the card? I said, what card? So the card that you're supposed to put on the table. So there's no such thing. She said that guy from the health inspector told me to ask for a card to documentation that it's a real service. I said, there's no such thing. I said, and honestly, you can't refuse me. The ADA is a federal law. I don't know what a state, you know, food inspector, where his power would be on that. But eventually she saw the dog was well mannered. She seated us. Everything was fine. She came by the table a little later, asked where my dog was. I pointed under the table asleep, and she got much nicer. She explained that she's had people come in with their service therapy, whatever, dogs that were not well behaved, that were, you know, bothering other people. And she said at one point somebody came with a pit bull, claiming it was his service dog.
Oh, wow.
And she refused him, and the guy threatened to call the police. And she finally said, no, I'm afraid of that dog. I don't want that dog in here around my customers. And the guy did leave. He did not, you know, he made noise about calling the police, but of course he didn't, because I'm sure he didn't have any certification.
What you're pretty much saying, Bill, is that these, for lack of a better term, fake support animals and their masters are making it more and more difficult for people like you who are very sincere about bringing your animal into a place that it's entitled to be at.
Exactly. Exactly. And there seems to be, and this seems to have become more prevalent since the pandemic, there just seems to be a greater sense of personal entitlement. I can take my dog anywhere I want to go. And, you know, I'm in a grocery store and my wife tells me, you know, that woman over there has got a dog. Oh, it's sniffing the vegetables, the fresh produce. Oh, wonderful. It just peed on the floor and she's walking away. And I'm thinking, you know, this is such a good example for people to see. And they see that kind of scenario happen. And then they see me with my dog and they get concerned. And my dog couldn't care less about any of that. She might sniff and I tell her no and she stops. You know, if you have a dog and it doesn't sniff, then there's something to be concerned about. But you just, years ago, I'm going to ramble a bit, Bob. Years ago, my second guide dog and I got into a car accident and I had to retire her early. She was physically fine, but she developed PTSD. She wouldn't cross streets. And I know the accident was not her fault at all. It was completely the car's fault. We did everything correct. But she was young and she was an amazing dog. So I got it into my head, let's see about turning her into a therapy dog. Because at that time, you heard the words therapy dog. You thought of nursing homes, hospitals, and that kind of thing. You didn't think of, you know, everyone with their own personal therapy dog. And I looked in, there were various certifications. They were all 1 or 2 day certifications, but that dog had to be at least basically well trained and have good obedience and be clean and be this and be that. And, you know, what was a therapy dog 10 years ago is not what a therapy dog is now.
So, you know, I do have a service dog. I've had a guide dog for years. And I sort of share your experience. Excuse me. And I've gotten to the point where I just don't, for a number of reasons, I'm less willing to fly with a dog these days, in part because of the form you got to fill out. And the other piece for me, which has nothing to do with emotional support dogs, is that airlines are far less reliable than they used to be about getting to places on time, and having a dog and having to wait 8 hours for a flight, which has been known to happen, is a real challenge. And I've sort of come to the conclusion that there are times when a dog is not really needed. And it's too bad, you know, cause I like my dogs, but part of the reason I don't travel with my dogs often is because I don't want to put too much pressure on the dog either. But let's go back to the emotional support dogs. I had an experience in an airport recently with some kind of bulldog in a crate that was growling at my dog, who ignored it. And it was, you know, from that perspective, but I mean, the owner or the handler, whatever you want to call it, did nothing. You know, then they no effort to
discorrect the dog.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, and so, and I know this is, excuse me. I know this is a major problem, and you know, you can't be on any list discussions, and this comes up all the time. And so I'm curious, you travel a lot for the work that you do. What are some strategies to address this problem? I mean, we acknowledge it's a problem. We acknowledge there are no easy solutions to this. What are some suggestions on how we might be able to make life a little bit easier for ourselves?
That's a very good question. I just try and always just be as friendly and cooperative and non-aggressive. I'm not saying, you know, I just let them walk all over me, but I've dealt with and interacted with some people who get a little overly aggressive if they don't feel like they're being treated right. And I've had issues, you know, I've never had any real issues in an airport. I had lots of Uber driver issues. Yeah, there's one particular story. I actually had to call the police on an Uber driver recently. And this isn't a direct answer to what you just asked me, Peter, but I think this is an interesting story. And this shows the problem that the fake service dog caused. I was at the gym. It was in February. It was the coldest day of the year. It was about 45 degrees and it was raining. So I called for my ride home and car pulls up. Gentleman doesn't speak English and he says, no dog. And I said, she's a service dog. You know, you have to transport. And he's, no, amigo, no dog. And the gentleman didn't speak any English, but he was very courteous. He wasn't trying to be rude about it. And I tried to explain to him, you know, you can lose your job over this and so forth. I used the, what's it called? Google Translate on my phone and, you know, explained it, you know, in say in Spanish, you can lose your job if you don't transport the dog and, you know. And I eventually called the police. The gentleman tried to drive away and his window was open. So I just kind of leaned on his open, you know, windowsill and I wasn't being forceful, but I kind of just put myself in a physical position that he really couldn't leave. And all I wanted to do was go home. I was cold and I was wet and the dog was wet. So I called 911. I said, this isn't an emergency, but explained the whole scenario. They sent the police out. This officer spoke to him in Spanish, and I'm sorry I'm making the story long, but I'm trying to make it as short as I can here. And the police officer explained to me, he had another dog in the car, and it tore up the seats. So he understands he can lose his job. He don't care if he loses his job. No more dogs in his car. And he just said, sorry, amigo, and he drove away. Luckily, the police were really cool. They drove me home. But, you know, he was very courteous about it, but he was emphatic. There was not going to be a dog in his car no matter what. And it was because there was somebody with probably a fake service, fake therapy dog in that car.
A common problem that I hear about amongst the blind community, and this is, I wish I had a dollar for every story that I hear about regarding ride service and Uber service and how guide dogs and other service animals are constantly being refused. Passengers have had kerfuffles with drivers. A lot of these drivers, I mean, I wish there was a training program for Uber where drivers are taught sensitivity to these issues, and especially with the ADA and guide dogs and why they're so necessary for blind people. I hear so many stories. I mean, even the consumer groups are getting involved with some of these Uber cases, Bill.
Well, I've had the experience, the smarter drivers will just drive by. You know how you get an Uber or Lyft, I don't know which one that says, all right, your driver's 100 yards away, 50 yards away, your driver is here. Oh, sorry, we missed you. You know, I'm standing on a residential street and it's a quiet street and I hear a car pulling up and slowing down and then it keeps going and, you know, then it pops up on the screen. Sorry, we missed you. Please try again. That's what the smart Uber drivers do. The stupid ones, they stop and they say no. But I had a driver, and this was a horror story that turned into a good scenario. I was at wherever I was and, you know, guy pulled up and he said, no, I'm sorry, I'm not going to transport the dog. I said, look, I need to go home. And he said, I'm not going to transport your dog. He was an American gentleman, no accent, none of the issues we have down here with people from other countries that don't really understand certain things. And he started to drive away. And again, the window was open. So I leaned on the window and he started to close the window. I said, look, I don't want to be a jerk about this, but I'm not backing off and you're going to end up with a broken window if you don't, you know, transport the dog. He said, all right, get it. He just, fine. very annoyed, huffy, and I got in the back. It was a Toyota Corolla, smallish back seat, but plenty of room. And I get in, and she said, well, I didn't think the dog would fit. No, she fits fine. I told her she's been in Corvettes. She's been in Mustangs. 5 minutes later, we're at a traffic light, and this guy that was refusing to transport my dog is turned around, looking over the seat, reaching over, going, what a pretty baby. It was like this complete turnaround. And he did eventually apologize to me. He said, I just didn't think the dog was going to fit. But, you know, and he was very nice with me. It was a long ride, but it got physically, you know, ridiculous.
I think in a lot of cases, although it's very easy to be frustrated with some of these drivers because of what they don't know, the fact is they really don't know. Should they be educated about it? Yes.
Absolutely.
But if they don't know, I think teachable moments might be the way to go, or patience. I know it's difficult for some people. It's a hassle. Like this man inconvenienced you because you needed to go home and he's still delaying the process. I get that. It goes back to what I've said. There should be, and I'm not sure who can propose this officially, a training program for Uber. Officially.
I would agree with you. I would agree with you completely. And normally I'm not aggressive about it. I will explain, you know, it is the law. I don't want to get you in trouble. I'll always try and soften it that way. I don't want to get you in trouble. I know you need your job, but it is the law and I really need to go home. And I am one definitely, if I'm not in a hurry, when you get people that want to pet the dog, I will, if I have the time, I will take the harness off and I will explain, harness on, she's working, harness off, she's a dog. I'll do it with kids especially, because kids will come running up and say, can I pet your dog? Kids are better behaved about it than adults. Adults will just reach out and start petting the dog.
And kids usually ask.
Kids come running up and then they ask, and then I'll explain everything about the harness and working and so forth. It seems, yeah, people, like I said before, there's this sense of entitlement. Best thing I ever heard was I was in one of the big box stores with my wife, at Walmart or something, and I heard a little kid who was riding in the grocery cart, mother was pushing him around, mommy, that's a working dog, you're not allowed to pet them. And I just went, somebody's teaching that kid right.
Good.
That just made me very happy.
I'm thinking, sorry, our internet is spotty, so that's why I'm fading in and out. You talk about entitlement, and I think there's some truth to that, and the entitlement goes in all directions, right? It's not just, you know, it's not just the disabled people who might feel entitled. It's the drivers. It's the folks who get these fake licenses. Everybody feel that they're entitled to what they want when they want it. And the other thing that I think is a problem is we tend to be less tolerant of other people these days. And we can talk about why that is, but.
Oh, what Peter just said is very true. I don't know if anyone can hear me or if he just popped out, but.
I hear you just fine.
Okay. But it is.
I'm not saying that it's, you know, that it's possible, you know, that you can't still, you know, do what you're doing, but I think we're in a different world than we were 10 years ago.
We definitely are.
Yeah.
We definitely are. 10 years ago, very rarely would someone just, you know, as I'm walking by, if they're sitting at a table on like in a street cafe and just reach out and pet my dog. People will do that constantly. And the, you know, when I ask them not to, the response is, oh, but I love dogs. And, you know, if just depends on how obnoxious and aggressive they are about it. But what you said also, Peter, though, there is a sense of entitlement with some disabled people. I am disabled. You have to. That's not the way to approach it.
Yeah.
I, you know, that's my last resort when I say it's the law. You have to do this or you're breaking the law. That's my absolute last approach. But there are people that will throw that, I am disabled, and that don't work.
And especially doesn't work now.
It does not work at all.
Not so much as they used to, too. I think so.
So, Bill, my question then is, where you have had experiences with Uber drivers, as others have, and you don't want to use your disability as leverage to reinforce the law with them, What would be the approach that you would suggest that would be less radical, yet sends the clear message to the driver at the same time?
Well, you know, I do have to tell them, I'm sorry, but you are required to take the dog. It's, it is the law. I'd say, I don't want to get you in trouble. And, I know you're just trying to make a living. She does. Trust me, she's going to probably be cleaner than some of the people you get in this car. I'll throw something like that out. And it's like, you don't have to worry. She's not going to be on the seat. She's going to be on the floor. And, I will try and soften it and make a joke about it. Like I said, cleaner than a lot of the people that probably get in this car and that kind of thing. Cause I've noticed in talking with Uber drivers that a lot of their passengers have that sense of entitlement and they don't care if they trash the car. So yeah. It's just showing respect. That's just showing respect to the driver. He's trying to make a living. He's not your servant.
Yeah, it is. It we live in I think difficult times, and I think that what it requires is more grace from us and sort of conflict resolution management skills than we used to need. And I guess I should emphasize that most of the time, at least in my experience, people are terrific still. You go into a restaurant, people are still, supportive most of the time. The problem is those rare occasions when they're not, they are more likely to stay by their decision, not to follow the law. And that's the challenge. I think what you're talking about is being respectful and, trying to keep things low key and all that stuff is important and useful. And I think we need to accept the fact that we live in times when that doesn't always work. And that leaves us a bunch of options, none of which are very good, right? I mean, we can threaten to sue. The problem with threatening to sue is we have a court system right now that is less likely to take those suits seriously. I mean, that's
of course,
so threatening to sue has limited impact. And, we live in tougher times than we did 10 years ago. And I think we need to accept that. I don't have any good answers any more than anybody else does. But I think it's also worth remembering, as I said before, that most, at least in my experience, most people most of the time are still terrific when it comes to these dogs. So
my experience, at least years ago and still sometimes, always was you can't bring the dog in. Yeah, it's the law. She's a service dog. Oh, I didn't know that. Really? Yeah. Oh, okay. I had that conversation so many times years ago. They just didn't know. And most people, like I said, like that hostess in that one restaurant, she gave me a hard time, but then she's over at the table looking down at the dog going, oh, she's so good. And she told me about the situation with the pit bull and she's a nice lady. She was just trying to be protective of her business.
Yeah.
She didn't necessarily go about it in the right way, but she was trying to protect her business. And, we're all just trying to get by.
Yeah.
That's all.
Bill, before we open up our festivities to our participants, because we do have people who probably eager to ask you questions as well that are listening right now, I wanted you to talk a little bit about something that I referred to briefly during our introductions, and that is about the airline situation where all kinds of animals are suddenly showing up on airplanes. And to me, that's out of hand as well. Would you agree with that?
I think it's ridiculous. I mean, I've heard of birds. I've heard of somebody bringing a pig. I know there are legitimate guide horses, but I mean, this is crazy bringing that on a plane. The most ridiculous thing, I don't know if it was true or not, but I heard of someone trying to bring an ostrich. It's ludicrous. And then there was another story I heard where some young woman had her emotional support hamster and they refused her and she went and she threw it, drowned it in the ladies' restroom.
Okay, Bill, so I'm a pilot.
Okay. Really? And that's awesome, Bob.
Oh, well, I'm pretending.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, that's very cool. I would love to try that.
Yeah, self-driving airplane, right?
No. You need a sighted person there to go, pull up real quick. We're going to die. But other than that, to be able to steer it, I think it would be a blast.
So let's pretend I'm a pilot and I'm about to take off in about 20 minutes and I'm ushering passengers onto my airplane and I see support birds, support pigs, support ostriches, support hamsters. What do you think my job ought to be at that point as far as screening? How far should I screen these passengers? I can't just take any animal in sight, obviously. I wouldn't think so.
I don't think it's the pilot's responsibility. I think the land people should have, you know, done a little bit more, I guess, is due diligence the right word in this situation? Because what
even
I was going to
so.
Say is, what I was
so.
Going to ask you, is this pilot named Noah?
Yeah, even so, if you're getting on my airplane with something that I've never seen before on an airplane, I'm going to say, hey, wait a minute here, am I allowed to let you on with this animal?
My question there is, who has the authority? Does the pilot have the authority? Does the flight attendant have the authority? It's all very vague. Who is the final say that says, no, you can't have that iguana?
In defense of the airlines, I mean, the reason that we have to fill out this paperwork, which nobody likes.
Yep.
It has actually made things a little better for us people. The regulations, as I understand them now, only allow certain animals on these planes that, you know, that are emotional support dogs, you know, the whole pig, ostrich, whatever, I think is no longer relevant. So they're tightening the regulations. The downside for us as service dog users is we got to fill out the paperwork. They say it's successful, but it often is not. And that's a whole conversation. But I do think that the airlines are finally getting smart. I mean, this is why we have to fill out these forms in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that whole thing is getting better. You know, the problem, we still have problems with, you know, certain emotional support dogs who are unprofessional. You know, that bulldog who was growling at my service dog, my guide dog at the airport, you know, was kind of unnerving for me.
Sure. Absolutely.
Having said that, you know, the dog was in a crate and Fredo, my guide dog was, you know, didn't care very much about it. He sort of ignored it. And my thought was, okay, if he can ignore it, then I can ignore it. But it was sort of disconcerting because the handler of this emotional support bulldog, you know, wasn't even paying any attention to the bulldog, as far as I could tell, said nothing to the bulldog, you know.
No, I understand what you're saying. Cause that's, again, it's not a real, you know, it's, that's like, you know, you see people with their kids in the mall and the kids are screaming and yelling and, you know, mom's just looking at the jewelry counter or looking at the whatever.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing.
There is a reason why, you know, these, in this case, this bulldog was growling. And I think I would have liked to see the handler, you know, try to calm it down,
but yeah, there was give no, it a little
no
attention
to even do that. And that was kind of disturbing.
Yeah. The airport is traumatic for anyone. So, you know, if this dog's not used to being in a crated, caged, whatever you'd like to call it, and you know, all these people around, and if it's a very protective of its handler or owner, and sees all these strangers around you, it's going to probably be a little aggressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's okay. I mean, it's not okay, but you know, at the very least, I would expect that the handler would try to calm it down.
I would expect that, but like I said, it's like this no different. I used to work in a kiosk in a mall years ago, and it used to blow my mind watching, you know, mom standing at the jewelry counter and the kids screaming and yelling and, you know, the mom's just totally ignoring it.
What's that?
I said, and the mom just, you know, totally ignoring it. I saw it constantly. So it's the same thing. People are like, well, you know, the dog's in his cage. I'm fine. It was a lousy day. I got to fly. I hate doing this mess. And you know, she's not doing anything. She's growling at people. Good. They'll leave her alone.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's let somebody else take care of it.
You know, the truth of the matter is the airline folks could have been a little smarter about it, sat me somewhere away from the dog. You know, there are a lot of seats in the area and they didn't do that. But you know, that's not really their job. Ultimately their job is to,
get you from point A to point B. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I've found when I've traveled alone with my dog and my wife is amazed because she's, you know, walked in with me to help me and I've told her I don't need any help. I got all this. And I get, you know, amazing treatment from the airlines. I always have. And I guess it's just how you approach it. But the people have always try to be really super helpful.
I think things have gotten a lot better in that particular way. I think the airline folks are better trained. One of the things I'm always curious about is when somebody comes up from the airlines and needs and I need help. It used to be that people sort of assumed that they knew what I wanted.
Yeah.
That was annoying. And now they're asking the right question, which is, how can I best help you?
Right.
And
exactly.
That itself is a lot better, you know, than it used
to be. Oh yeah. It definitely is. The thing that's, I find actually kind of funny is, I tell them I need assistance to baggage or I need assistance to the exit or whatever when I'm getting off a plane. And then somebody comes running up with a wheelchair and it's like, well, what are we going to do with that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you want me to hold the dog on my lap or, is the dog going to run alongside? I actually told the one guy, cause he was an older gentleman. I said, you having a long day? Good. You sit down. I'll push, but you're right. In the past, people just treated me nicely out of common courtesy. And, you were talking about long, like an 8 hour longer flight where it's tedious and you got to get the dog outside at some point. And I actually have had flight crews take my dog out on the tarmac to empty for me. They told me, you're not allowed out there. It's against the law, but I'll take her for you.
Yeah, that's happened to me too. Yeah, you're right. I mean, people really do make an effort most of the time. And I think as far as etiquette, it's much better now than it was 20 years ago. The other thing I find interesting, just as we're on this subject, is I like taking escalators. I find them faster. I find them less irritating than elevators. And it used to be that I could never win that argument from airline people. I'd always have to take the elevator. And now more often than not, if I say I want to take the escalator, they go, okay, fine, and people are much more tolerant and flexible about things like that than they used to be, which I find were very refreshing. So
it is.
Props to the airline folks who are doing a better job.
Yeah, for the most part, I agree with you.
Yeah, they are doing a better job. Unfortunately, the emotional support thing is a major hassle, and I don't know how you deal with that. It would be nice if we could shut down those online fake licenses and stuff, but I don't know if that's even possible.
That would be akin to shutting down the porn industry or some other big, or the online gaming.
It ain't gonna happen. I don't know how you could do that legally. It would be a major.
I don't think you could.
No, I mean, there's obviously money involved. Otherwise people wouldn't be doing this.
And there are so many people doing it.
Yeah.
I would like to turn our festivities over to our participants. You are listening to In Perspective. Our guest is Bill Kosiaba. He's talking about experiences with emotional support animals, guide dogs, Uber drivers, all that many of us hear about constantly, especially amongst the blind population. Trish, do we have any hands raised at this particular time?
We absolutely do. We have two, and the first one is Deanna.
Hi.
Welcome. Welcome, Deanna.
Yeah. Bill, I don't think we've ever met, but I am a 10-time graduate of the Seeing Eye.
God bless you.
I got my first in 1968. And yes, it has changed, sometimes in a positive way. I remember we could not go into a restaurant or rent a hotel room in Utah when I was driving across country. We had to go through drive-thrus and find a place to park to sleep because there was no state law in Utah. Mm-hmm. But the thing that people need to remember when you are in a situation where another dog is menacing your dog, even our dogs must be under the control of the handler at all times. Our dogs are not allowed to bark, growl, lunge, or misbehave without our taking immediate steps to get our animal under control. If we cannot control our animal, the vendor, whether it's a restaurant, a hardware store, or Walmart, has a perfect right to dispel the disruptive dog that is posing a danger to its other customers, causing disruption of the services they're providing. And that's the thing that I tell them when I say, yes, this is a service dog and you're allowed to ask me what service he provides, and I will tell you that according to his harness, you can see he is a seeing eye registered guide dog for the blind. And if they give me the, well, you don't look blind, I sometimes will get snippy and say, well, I could remove my two plastic prosthesis, but I think you might be grossed out. And if I drop them, they're very expensive. You know, but what I tell them is you do have the right to deny me service if my dog is not behaving the way he should. And you can see he's sitting here quietly at my side, and I will place him in such a way that your wait staff don't have to trip over him, and he will lie quietly under the table. If there's any disruption, it'll be because people will try to engage my dog, and, you know, I will have to shoo them away because that's breaking his behavior if someone is engaging him. I've had people block a doorway and crouch down to talk baby talk to my shepherd, and I taught him to turn his head and look up at me when they did that, and I would rub his ears each time he would do that, and I'd say, I'm sorry, he's not allowed to talk to strangers. And the woman got up and said, oh, I'm sorry. You know, I do my control of my dog and its behavior, a gentle leader if it's a sniffer in grocery stores. And this one is also a greeter if people make eye contact. And if they speak to him and engage him. Yeah, he's a lovely yellow lab with big amber gold eyes. And everybody says, oh, he's so cute. And then that is his automatic turn on, I'm engaged, tail wag. Yeah. And I will pull him back and make him sit. And I say, if I have to correct him for breaking his focus, then pretty soon when he sees you, he will try to avoid you because he doesn't want to get in trouble with the boss. So please don't engage. You know, I try to make it as instructive as I can without losing my temper or being rude. And I've done the same with Uber. Before, the driver was, I think, from an Arabic country by his name, and he said, I'm afraid of dogs. I don't want him in my car. And I said, he is under my complete control. He will not get on the seat. He will not even sniff you. I will keep him under my control. And he drove me, but he was so agitated, he took me to the wrong end of the building, and I had to go inside and get directions to get to the meeting that I needed to go. So they had to cut a staffer loose to walk me through the building to the meeting room that I needed. But, you know, it did work out, and he did take me. You have to be reasonable, but I have also done the thing where DC cab drivers for a while were the worst in the country. And so I was traveling with another person from Colorado, and I was teaching her how to do legislative work. And she insisted on stopping at the Supreme Court building because she wanted to buy a gavel that says Supreme Court on it in the gift shop in the basement. Yes, we go down, we find it. She's hemming and hawing about whether she wants oak, cherry, or walnut. And I said, the walnut is the most dignified. Your son will love it, because her son was in forensics, and she wanted him to be able to, you know, have a fancy gavel that says Supreme Court in it. So, okay, we get it. We go outside, and I said, you've really made us late. We're going to miss our flight if we don't get a cab right away. And I'm trying to flag cabs, and they slow down and then they take off because two women are standing with German shepherds. And so the guy from the gift shop came out and he says, you haven't gotten a cab yet? Cause he was trying to log up and leave. So he was very glad when I got her to go. And I said, yes, can you do me a favor? And he said, sure. And I said, okay, you flag the cab. We'll turn our backs to you and be engaged in conversation. You open the back door and hold it open. We'll run and jump in the cab when it gets here. And that's what we did. And so two German shepherds barrel into the back of the cab with their handlers. And I told the cab driver, he started to get excited. And I said, $20 extra if you can get us to the airport on time or we'll miss our flight. And so when we got to the airport, I was looking and our flight was due to take off in 10 minutes. So I handed the 20 to the driver and I said, she'll pay for the cab. And I took my little carry-on bag, which is what I was carrying, and jumped out of the cab and said, door inside. My dog flashes to the door. We go through. I get inside and yell at the top of my lungs, I need assistance. And very large man walked over to me and said, how can I help you, ma'am? And I said, I'm about to miss my flight. And he says, let me see your ticket. And he takes it and he says, and your ID. And I hand it to him and he cuts the line, takes me to the front to the agent. He says, here, process this. And I said, I have a friend. She should be coming through the door about now. Slender woman with a smaller German shepherd. And he said, I see her. And he took off. He went and got her, cut the line, handed her stuff over to the agent. She processed it. And he says, now, how do I get you to your flight? It's not far. And I said, I will lead my dog and take your elbow. She will follow us. And that's what we did. So we go through. He gets us on the plane, puts our bags up in the overhead and settles us. And I said, thank you very much, Marshall. And he said, no problem, ma'am. And he walks away and she said, was his name Marshall? And he said, no. When I took his elbow, I could feel that he was wearing a gun. So I figured he was a U.S. Marshal.
So he was an Air Marshal.
Yeah. And yeah. I said, so I don't know whether the people at the part where you have to go through security thought we were under arrest or whatever, but he didn't take us through the security check through. He took us through back way and directly onto our flight. And
wow.
So I don't know if they thought we were under arrest, but it got us on our flight and we didn't have to try to figure where we were going to sleep overnight if you'd caused us to miss the flight.
And we have 10 minutes and one more hand.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Deanna, thank you as always for your contribution.
Yes, Deanna, that was interesting.
Okay, next we have Deborah.
Hello, Deborah.
Hello, Bill and Peter.
Hey, Deborah.
And a good presentation, yeah. We have a situation here in Peterborough, Ontario, in Canada here. There is a fellow that has a dog, and he said, first of all, the dog's not wearing a vest. He's not wearing a harness. He gets these dogs from somewhere, I guess, out in the country. He tells us, you know, the dog was trained in Bancroft or wherever that, you know. We looked, checked on the internet. There's no guide dogs. There's no service dog training school in that small town. We have tried just about everything. And this is after his dog has attacked several actual guide dogs and other service animals. And we find out that one of the malls here in Peterborough felt that he was being picked on. And when this other dog was not able to be of service to this fellow, they went and actually bought him this dog. So when complaints were made from other folks with guide dogs, they snapped back and said, so you're putting your rights over this man. You think that your dogs have all the rights in the world. And this guy, when all he wants is, you know, a service dog to help him, they try to explain. Guide dog users of Canada came in and they tried to explain that, look, we're not being mean to this man. The dog that he has is not in any way, shape or form an authorized dog. And we've tried to tell this man, your dog needs to be certified. He needs to be registered. He needs to be formally trained for, you know, the disability that you have. Oh, no, it's not anything. This guy is mentally
challenged.
He's got personality issues and he's got, And a lot of homeless people now we find nowadays are getting licenses, you know, online, and they put on a fake thing on the dogs because they want their dogs to protect them. And
we do have another hint, just so you know, Bob.
Yeah, right, I just you, wanted Trish. To mention that. Thank you, guys. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Deborah.
Listening.
Thank you.
Okay. Who's next?
Okay, next we have Nora.
Hello, Nora.
Yeah, hello. I'm a quick.
Hi, Nora.
Hello. I don't own a dog, a C&I dog, but anyway, my question is, what about when you go on regular city buses and light rail and things like that? Do they allow you to take your guide dog with you then?
Absolutely.
That's good. Thank you.
Any public transportation. Basically, that dog, by law, can go anywhere except a sterile area, like a operating room or an ICU kind of environment. A dog can't be refused anywhere else.
Right. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Nora. Anybody else?
Okay.
We're clear right at this very second.
All right. Let us know when that changes.
Okay.
You've got a great facilitator there, Bob.
Oh, thank you very much, Bill. Thank you. You know, you mentioned the operating room, and I think I recall a conversation that I had one time with a patient, and there was an issue about a guide dog going into the operating room, so I'm glad that Nora reminded me of that. That's a sterile environment, so that's an exception to the rule. So
exactly.
Where would that dog be required to be situated during the surgical procedure?
See, that's kind of like a really vague thing, because is it the hospital's responsibility? Or is it the patient's responsibility? I don't believe it's a hospital's responsibility to have a designated, I don't know what, storage area to put the dog in. You know, if you're going in for surgery, it would be ridiculous for you to bring your dog because you're very likely not going home and not going to be able to work the dog later in the day. So I don't honestly have a good answer for what you just said.
So are you saying that it's common to have patients bring their dogs with them to the hospital despite why they're there?
No, I can't imagine if I were going in for surgery, bringing my dog, what's the poor dog going to do? I can't work the dog. I can't get him outside once I've gone through surgery and recovery and all that. It's an inappropriate place for someone to bring the dog under those circumstances. You have the right to take the dog everywhere, but that doesn't mean it's a good idea.
I have a dog story to relate. It's kind of humorous, but it might be something that a lot of people can relate to in these situations. I hosted a party of blind people several years ago. I used to do it annually, as a matter of fact. Well, one year, a lady went with us who had a guide dog named David. True story. She named her guide dog David. So normally when I have these parties, I take a roll call. I want to know who's there and who's not there. So I take a roll call based on the list that I created when people accepted the invitation to the party.
Yeah, you can't exactly do a head count, can you?
Well, yeah, I can. So in my own way, I can certainly do a head count. But the point is, there was a gentleman at the party named David. And the lady with the guide dog told me not to say his name when I do the roll call. Call him by his last name. Don't say his first name because the dog might react. So I purposely had to say Mr. Baharian instead of David.
Right.
Because the lady who owned the guide dog with that name didn't want me to say his name.
Understand. Is that valid?
Is that common? I have another experience for you where I wasn't allowed to say the guide dog's name in front of the owner or the guide dog. I wasn't allowed to say his name.
I honestly believe, because I've known a few people who were like that, don't use my dog's name. I think it's insecurity on their part, and they don't really have that good a bond or that good of control over their dog.
I was under the impression that the owner was afraid the dog would react when it wasn't his turn to react.
Well, that was what their fear was, but what I'm saying is, you know, if you've got this dog well trained, yeah, okay. If you say, hey, Nika, my dog's going to pick her head up, and then she's going to, oh, nothing important.
But if I, but
But if I said, I'll be with you in a second, Trish, I think I know what you're going to tell me. But I just wanted to react to what Bill just said. What if I was in a conversation with somebody near Nika and I said, my neighbor Nika offered me a cup of coffee last week. That doggone would be like, don't mention Nika's name. And I wasn't mentioning the dog's name. I was mentioning another girl named Nika.
My dog wouldn't even react to that. Right. My dog probably wouldn't even react to that. She might look in your direction. That's it.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I don't think we have time, but we do have another hand in only 2 minutes.
We'll take it anyway. We'll give them a minute. Who do we have? All right.
Mary Carla Hayes. Go ahead, Mary Carla.
Hello.
Hi, Mary Carla.
Hi there.
Hey,
just two. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Just two funny stories that are real quick. Do you remember the time that I think it was Paul Edwards was president and we were in general session and we were actually discussing a guide dog resolution and it passed almost unanimously. He said, everybody in favor say aye. We all said aye. He says, those opposed. And one guide dog barked. It was like, woof. And remember he said, sorry, you guys can't vote. And the other funny little thing that I got to tell you is
we have 20 seconds.
Just my little Sparky's gone. But every time I would say Sharky, you know, for Jaws, the AI, or I'd say Sparky, Sharky would come up on the computer. So I just thought I'd end with a little levity with this couple of stories and names.
Thank you, Mary Carla. Bill, our time is up, but it was a pleasure having you on. I think a lot of us on this call and beyond can relate to your issues and your concerns. I think we all share the same concerns, and we just hope that the people involved will cooperate more. Like Peter mentioned, the airlines are doing better. That's good. We just have to have patience with people and realize that a lot of them just don't know what they should know, and it's okay. They have to learn, and they will, hopefully, how to handle the situation involving support animals and blind people. Thank you so much, everybody. Go safe with God's abundant blessings, and have a great week. We'll talk next week.